D.C. Council members listened to testimony from an array of sources in the first of 2 days of hearings concerning the conduct of the Metropolitan Police Department during mass demonstrations. Councilmember Kathy Patterson, chair of the Judiciary Committee, expressed concern about the actions of the police.
What we're discussing is part of a larger and a national debate on how to protect civil liberties while also assuring public safety. My own concern is that the scales have tipped away from free speech. When I read about the incidents in Miami, I fear that law enforcement may, in some instances, be confusing robust debate with civil disturbance. When that distinction gets blurred, all of our rights are threatened. We have seen police abuses in the past here and across the country. It's the job of elected policymakers through our oversight of police departments to question and, as necessary, to legislate parameters to make sure our department is protecting and not jeopardizing constitutional rights.
The committee heard testimony from lawyers, retired police officers, protesters, and current members of the police force. Even members of the police department questioned the legality of the arrests of almost 400 people in Pershing Park during demonstrations on September 27th, the committee found. This is Darby Hickey.
What you gonna do? With regard to the April 2000 IMF World Bank demonstrations, we do not have a trial date at this stage. The demonstrations, the litigation related to the counter-inaugural demonstrations is in the final phases of discovery, and we would hope that that would go to trial next year. And that litigation is litigation at this point that has revealed the undercover domestic spying operation as well as the Asian provocateurs who are assaulting demonstrators. It's been, we think, very significant in really exposing the illegal police conduct that's going on in the district.
A quick follow-up on that. We have not thus far in our review found any evidence of a policy of use of agents provocateur. Can you share any more with what you are intending to prove in court in terms of that as a policy?
I cannot at this point, and I would be uncomfortable doing that because it's a matter in litigation, but I can say that we have additional circumstances of police officers who we understand to be agent provocateurs who are posing as protesters within demonstrations, and that that is not an isolated incident.
Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do?
What is perhaps even most shocking about it is not merely the fact of it and the visual image of it, but the fact that when confronted with this footage, the District of Columbia, the Corporation Council, and the Metropolitan Police Department ratified the conduct of the police officers on that footage. They did a completely, what we believe to be a fraudulent investigation, exonerating the police officers, and formally stating that their conduct is in accordance with D.C. policy, and are using taxpayer funds to defend those police officers.
That is something we'll get into later today with one of the other panels. Councilmember Ambrose, did you have a question?
I think that a lot of people, a lot of District of Columbia residents, will be shocked to know that our Metropolitan Police Department is using agents provocateur as a matter of general police policy. I was shocked to learn that. That is not something that I ever remember our police department doing as a regular policy matter.
Bad boys, what you gonna do?
Yeah, I've been working this beat for about 3 days now. You definitely have to have pretty thick skin or else these people just walk all over you.
The testimony earlier today was by Mr. Eidinger, who talked about individuals working undercover, in fact becoming what I think our special counsel referred to as false friends with folks who were planning demonstrations over the course of a year, where an undercover officer or officers, I believe he referred to, would go to meetings in individuals' homes, would become sort of part of the social life of individuals. And these were organizations, again, that have been identified solely as organizations opposed to some of the trade policies of this country and other countries. Would you please comment on that? Is that, in fact, a policy and practice of MPD right now to infiltrate anti-globalization organizations?
Well, first of all, we don't infiltrate any organization. For the record, we attend meetings. In that situation...
And your distinction between those two is...
We're not sneaking into these meetings. We are being invited to these meetings.
Again, somebody is undercover, not identified as a Metropolitan Police Department officer, go to a meeting to help plan a protest. That's what we're talking about.
Right, to obtain...
So when you say we are invited to the meetings, not
right.
we MPD, but we, someone pretending not to be MPD.
An individual from the police department, in their capacity as an undercover,
right.
is invited to a meeting. They're invited into people's homes. They're not there to obtain information about political issues, religious beliefs, social beliefs, sexual preferences.
Sometimes you have to go undercover to get the worst of them.
Hi there, little lady.
Well, hi there. What are you doing tonight?
Hey, wait a minute. You're just a kid.
Maybe this will teach you to listen to authority.
Ow! Ooh. Ow! Ow! Hey, man, what are you doing? Ow! Stop it!
Yeah, sometimes upholding the law is messy. But you get by. One day at a time.
There were issues that came out around the issue of public safety. That's the only thing we're concerned about is public safety.
And if there is an issue and that officer, for instance, intends a meeting for 2 weeks, 2 months, 6 months, and there is nothing to be reported that is a threat to public safety, do you then pull the person out of that organization?
Where I sit, personally, no. Those discussions occur at a much lower level between the sergeant in charge of intelligence and lieutenant in charge of intelligence. I know that the undercover officers are brought in, they're briefed. If there's no information coming from a group that they're not talking about issues that would involve public safety, we won't be attending those meetings. We're only interested in meetings where they're talking about engaging in civil disobedience and doing some type of property damage to the city. Anything else, we have no interest in.
Has the Metropolitan Police Department provided information to the Federal Bureau of Investigation regarding anti-war demonstrators?
Specifically, I don't remember ever sharing a name of an anti-war demonstrator with the FBI. We share information about the group that's coming, but as it relates to the more recent meetings we've had, I don't know because Commander Lanier has attended some of them for the anti-war. I have not attended the anti-war meetings with the federal partners, so I can't answer that question. I don't know if it's being shared.
What is the policy threshold of the Metropolitan Police Department for sharing information about demonstrators with the FBI, for example? If you, in fact, would share a name of an anti-war protester with the FBI, what would be the purpose and what would be the rationale?
What
would be the justification?
And as I'm sitting here thinking, that's what I was trying to think. I don't think that we would share that information unless there was specific information about an individual as it relates to public safety.
Bad boys, what you gonna do?
Share this. The officer acted with sufficient cause to believe that an immediate danger existed to his physical being and that of others. I didn't see any danger to this officer in that tape, and I saw a huge police presence in the vicinity that we could see all the folks from different units. Do you have any idea how the investigative officer could have concluded that there was immediate danger?
Again, it would be unfair for me to comment on that because I've never read the investigation. I don't know what went into the investigation other than I know was fully investigated by the Office of Professional Responsibility.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a subsequent
okay. Bad boys, bad boys, what you gonna do?
Now, I want to get back to this business about infiltration. My word, you object to it. But I want to talk about the specifics of that kind of attention that you focus on individuals. When you have an undercover officer, and that officer is interested in monitoring in some way the activities of a group that we've identified or you've identified, is it not the case that to be effective, that undercover officer has to, in effect, insinuate him or herself into the everyday lives of the people that they've become friendly with?
Not necessarily.
But sometimes they do.
Well, I think you'd have to give me an example.
Well, for example,
it's a broad statement.
if I'm an undercover officer and my cover is that I'm, somebody who's interested in these issues, and I make friends with people in the organization, and I have a story. My story is not that I'm an undercover officer for the Metropolitan Police Department. My story is something else. My story is that, you know, I work at McDonald's, and I don't like big corporations, and I want to find some outlet for my views, and I become friendly with these folks on that basis. Presumably, at some point, in order to maintain my cover, I have to act out my story. Would that be correct?
Probably to a certain degree, yes.
And to act out my story, then, I would have to, in some instances at least, maintain set of behaviors that would go beyond simply attending public meetings, correct?
Not necessarily.
But it might.
It could.
And in fact, in some stories, for them to be maintained, it would necessarily have to be the case. Wouldn't that be true?
Not necessarily.
But sometimes.
It could.
Okay. Now, furthermore, you said that you only attend public meetings.
Or meetings we're invited to.
Invited to undercover, which is to say, I'm sure the people listening must now know that when you say you're invited to, that you are not invited to it except as the false identity of someone not a member of the Metropolitan Police Department. Is that correct?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think those are your words. I would say that the officer has been put in an undercover capacity to obtain information around the issue of public safety. If they're invited to a meeting, they're to attend a meeting and then a report back of any information that comes out of the meeting that would compromise public safety in the city of Washington.
Well, let's look at the invitation. The invitation is to the person in their false identity, is it not? Now, you're saying that the reports that they provide only identify information relevant to public safety issues. Are you clear in your testimony that the only information they report back is information relevant to public safety activities and nothing more?
Well, I'm sure there are additional things in the report because some of these reports run 3, 4, or 5 pages long. The only issue that I'm interested in is an issue of public safety.
Well, that may be the only interested in, but it may not be the only issue that's being reported on. Is that right?
That's correct.
And these reports might also include the names of other persons with whom that person has then come in contact with, correct?
That's correct.
So that, for example, if I'm someone who invites the undercover officer to Martha's table and introduce around some other folks, their names might wind up in these reports, too. Is that possible?
Yeah, sure. That's possible.
Okay. Now, when you have these running reports of persons, you were asked before whether at some point if these reports, as they filter on up to you, show no likelihood of criminal activity, that at some point they should be pulled out. Is that your sense of the policy?
Through the best of times, through the worst of times, through mix it out the bush. 236, we're in our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. We live in authority, I live in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, a dog pellet. Oh, baby, what's that? Confuse the king.
We don't look at individuals, we look at groups, and I can't even think of other than that anarchist group that I'm talking about that we even got involved with anything with the FBI.
Can you define anarchist? What do you mean by that? Is this somebody you have had a conversation with so that you know their ideological point of view? Or say more about what you mean when you say anarchists or anarchist groups.
Because baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We march together for the 8-hour day.
Stop us when you left me all alone. All alone.
But there's information about anarchist groups, about what their beliefs are, about what their ideology is. It's all on the internet. So we get on the internet, we look at these type of things. We learn from other police departments of certain names of anarchist groups. For example, back in 2000 for the IMF, there were 46 anarchist websites that we were monitoring. So again, our goal is to try to learn as much as we can.
So by definition, there are occasions where intelligence information specifically identifies named individuals.
Sure.
Now, you didn't actually answer Councilwoman Patterson's question, so I'll put it to you again. Do you know, are you aware of any policy or any practice at any time where the Metropolitan Police Department has used agents provocateur?
I'm not aware of any policies on that, no.
Are you aware of any practice of the use of agents provocateur?
I'm not aware of any practice.
Are you aware of any occasion where such agents were used?
Do you have an example? I mean,
no, I'm asking you.
I'm personally not aware of it.